This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
And in the future, we will be looking beyond just the corporations and thinking about how do we get this integrated into all sorts of different applications, whether it's the buying the CRCs at the gas pump or when you make a purchase online from some e-commerce store, having the shipping of your package negated, or when you're riding around in a taxi or an Uber or something, having the ride negated and having all that automated in the background. That's the real interesting future for us.
If you ask most people what they think of blockchain applications or cryptocurrency, the response is usually a blank stare of utter bafflement. Well, this week on Sea Change Radio, we're going to try to make some sense of this arcane concept because our guest today, Paul Gamble, has devised a carbon dioxide removal marketplace which incorporates blockchain applications. Gamble explains how his new startup Nori uses blockchain applications, how it plans to ramp up into a vibrant marketplace of buyers and sellers, and why he believes this could actually help reverse the effects of climate change. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Paul Gamble. He's the CEO and co-founder of Nori. Paul, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me on, Alex.
I wanted to have you on because you founded this very interesting platform called Nori, which is not just trying to reduce carbon in the atmosphere, but trying to remove it. And you have an event coming up later this week, April 26th and 27th in Seattle, called Reversapalooza. So first, why don't you tell us, before we get into the details of Reversapalooza, why don't you explain the concept of Nori for our listeners?
Okay, sure. So Nori is a company with a philosophy that we're interested in not just making climate change and its effects less bad, but we're interested in undoing it and really trying to reverse climate change as much as we can. And that's where we get into the notion of carbon removal. So it's sort of simple arithmetic. We've put a lot of greenhouse gases up in the atmosphere ever since the start of the Industrial Revolution. And we are trying to incentivize different ways to pull those back out and store them somewhere in a very permanent fashion.
And it uses blockchain technology, which a lot of people have heard about but don't necessarily understand. It dates back to the first cryptocurrencies. Why don't you explain how the concept of blockchains are an integral part of the Nori platform?
Sure. So there are really kind of two sides to blockchains. People probably have also heard the term cryptocurrency, and they're not exactly the same thing, but they both serve a purpose with Nori. So a blockchain is really just a distributed ledger of transactions. And it's you can think of it like a shared database where everyone who is participating in the network, which is open to anyone at all times, has a copy of every single record that's existed and taken place on it. And what Nori is doing is we are taking the actions that what we call in our marketplace suppliers. So these are people who are removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere through any number of different methods. And we can talk about that later if you'd like. They are removing that. And then Nori does the work of measuring and verifying that carbon dioxide is removed through independent third-party verifiers. And when that happens, what's created for them on the blockchain is a certificate that we call the carbon removal certificate. And each certificate represents 1 ton of CO2, that's a metric ton of CO2 equivalent removed from the atmosphere and stored. Now, those certificates are going to eventually transfer ownership from the supplier to whoever ends up purchasing these certificates. We call those buyers in our marketplace. That ownership change and the transaction that enables that, that happens on the blockchain, so that after a buyer who might be, say, a large corporation who wants to offset the carbon emissions in their supply chain, after the buyer purchases those certificates, the record of them owning it and the record of what was actually done to remove the carbon dioxide, how it was measured, and making that data available to be audited by anyone, that's all open and completely transparent on the blockchain in a permanent record, so that there's nothing anyone can do to corrupt that or cheat the system. Once that data is on the blockchain, it's there and it's immutable. So the blockchain provides us this very open and transparent method of recording all the things that happen, because it's really important. Carbon dioxide is an invisible and odorless gas. We can't observe it. And so we have to take these other measures to verify that it's been removed and stored, and then make that information available. So that's the blockchain side of things. And then there's the cryptocurrency side of things, which is more on the financial aspect of this. And what we're doing is we are creating our own cryptocurrency that'll be called the Nori token. And when a buyer wants to purchase a carbon removal certificate, they will pay one token for every ton of CO2 that gets removed. And that exchange rate will always be the same. So that means that whatever price the buyer pays for the Nori tokens in dollars is the price that they end up paying for that carbon dioxide removed. And what that means is whatever price that token is trading at in the third-party cryptocurrency markets is now a universal market-driven price on carbon removal, which is something that's never existed before, and economists for decades have been saying this is what we need in order to make some measurable progress on turning the tide with global warming and climate change. So I'm really, really excited about that part.
Oh, it's a fascinating idea. Who is the target market for the platform? How would large corporations, the biggest polluters on the planet, or governments access the platform?
Yeah, so throughout sort of different stages in our roadmap, we are going to be targeting different groups of potential buyers. To start with, it's these large corporations who are already doing this sort of thing. There are many corporations who aren't under any sort of regulatory requirement to purchase these, but they're doing so voluntarily because their customers are demanding it, or their shareholders are demanding it, or maybe a trade group they're a member of is demanding it. They're buying these in large amounts. They're often buying these from the existing marketplaces. There are voluntary marketplaces and compliance marketplaces, and they're buying offset credits is what they're called, and we're sort of a little different from those. And we see those as the important big buyers at first to help get this marketplace off the ground. It's a really tricky task to set up and stand up a two-sided marketplace where we have these suppliers and buyers who have neither one of which has ever worked through us before. And so we need to make sure that we have enough of both as we get things going. Now, as we move into the future and we've established a working marketplace where buyers are purchasing carbon removal certificates, suppliers are signing up, we're getting more and more of them, we're getting new methodologies signed up on the platform, so new ways of removing carbon dioxide, we want to move into a situation where more and more smaller buyers are purchasing these. We want to make this available to anyone, any individual, any organization, a small community group, a public utility, anyone who might want to purchase these certificates, and try to find ways to embed these into everyday life. Imagine if you are pulling up to the gas station with your car and you fill up your gas tank, and at the end of the fill up, it asks if you want this gas tank to be made carbon neutral by purchasing these carbon removal certificates, and you just select yes, and then it charges you, and then in the background everything is routed through our system, purchases the certificates, and you'd be able to go online and look and see like what you purchased and what that tied to. So we see a real future of being able to scale this through embedding this in everyday life. That's really where like the difference starts to be made in terms of impacting carbon atmospheric concentrations.
So walk us through how a consumer pumping gas if they signed up for carbon removal on that tank would actually be somehow removing carbon from the atmosphere. I mean, they'd still be emitting carbon dioxide from their gas-guzzling vehicle, of course, but how would this work in the NORI platform?
Sure. I want to address one thing that you just said, which is that they'd still be emitting. And NORI takes the philosophy that we treat carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas emissions like a waste product. Now, compare this to how we deal with garbage and waste in our cities today. No one is advocating that we should live in a garbage-free society. We've instead chosen to collectively collect our waste, recycle as much as we can out of it, and then store what we can't as responsibly as possible. And we're proposing doing the same thing with our carbon dioxide. We don't take a moral position against carbon dioxide. We're trying to create this service so that people can still continue to use energy to improve human lives and increase trade and lift people out of poverty and all the other wonderful and amazing things that energy has done for the overall human condition. So there are many different ways that people can remove carbon dioxide. And I was sort of surprised when I started looking into this about 3 years ago, the number of different methodologies that could do this and how large of an impact they could potentially make.
What are some of the solutions that make you most optimistic, Paul?
The first and biggest one that could make the most impact is the first methodology that we're going to include on our platform, and that's soil carbon removal. So this is agriculture-based. Many people don't know that a large percentage of the global carbon dioxide emissions are actually from what's called land use change. So this one example of that could be large-scale farming, where the farms are tilling the soil and stirring up that topsoil, which releases a lot of the CO2 that's trapped in that top layer, anywhere from 20 to 48 or 20 to 50 centimeters down. There's a lot of carbon dioxide in there, and that process can actually be reversed through changing agricultural practices. If you stop using as much fertilizer and you till less and you use cover crops on your soil, so that would be leaving small crops growing in there during your off season when you're not harvesting your main cash crop, and you rotate crops around. You could do other things like managed grazing. So if you're a cattle rancher and you're moving your cattle around from paddock to paddock and managing how they graze in different areas. These practices can add up to a significant difference. And studies have shown that if we were to look at all of the cropland available in the United States, we could sequester over 1 billion tons of CO2 every single year. And to put that in perspective, globally, we emit around 35 to 40 billion tons of CO2. It's about 50 if you include other greenhouse gases. So it's about 50 billion tons every year going up into the atmosphere. About half of that gets included in the carbon cycle, and it gets stored in oceans and rocks and soil and so on. And we believe that it's anywhere from 1 to 1.5 trillion, with a T, tons of CO2 that need to be removed from the atmosphere in order to restore the atmospheric carbon concentrations back to around 300 parts per million, which is what it was at prior to the start of the Industrial Revolution. So 1 billion tons a year, just in soils in just the United States alone, that's not looking at the rest of the world, that's actually pretty significant. That's a measurable difference. So that's the first methodology that we're working with different farmers and different verifiers to develop the rules around how we measure that and getting that supply and inventory available to go when we launch our marketplace. She's alone in the new pollution. She's got a paradise camouflage, like a whip crack sending me shivers. She's a pole in a strip mine ocean, riding low in the drunken rivers. She's alone in the new pollution. She's alone in the new pollution.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Paul Gamble. He's the co-founder and CEO of Nori. So, Paul, just to give us some more context, so you're a voluntary carbon market.
That's right.
But this whole sector, just in 2016, accounted for only 18.5 million tons of CO2 equivalent offset.
In the voluntary, yeah.
In the voluntary space. It's still creeping along, basically. But you think using blockchain technology, it could exponentially grow similar to the way Bitcoin did. Is that a fair estimate? Or is there needs to be a lot of things in place along the supply chain to make that exponential growth kick in?
It's a bit of both. Part of the reason that those voluntary purchases are so small is because the way that the current markets are structured. If you look at the voluntary markets and it's less than 20 million tons purchased. But if you look at the compliance markets, it's much, much higher. And it's sort of difficult to get an exact number because these markets are different, but it's closer to the range of, hundreds of millions, if not in the billions. And one of the key differences between us and these other markets is that in our marketplace, it will be very clear to all parties involved that every single certificate represents one actual ton of CO2 removed, and that will be an auditable and traceable transaction. In the other markets, particularly in the compliance markets, it's sort of a not very much talked about issue that the credits that are issued often do not actually represent one ton of CO2 removed. That's because of the accounting methods that are used during these transactions and because they're slightly more complicated. The first difference is that we're only dealing with carbon removal, whereas the other markets are dealing with avoided carbon as well. Mm-hmm. So if you are building a wind farm or a dairy digester or something like that, you're still emitting carbon dioxide, but you're getting credits for not emitting as much as you would have otherwise, even though you don't necessarily have to prove that. It's sort of assumed that if you build a wind farm that you're just, by definition, avoiding the equivalent energy production's use, as opposed to building like a natural gas plant or something like that. The other issue is that in the cap and trade market, so cap and trade is a system, California has the largest market in North America doing this. There's an equivalent thing happening over in Europe and the EU. In the cap and trade market, the way that it works is the government sets a ceiling of how many tons of greenhouse gases an emitter is allowed to produce every year. In California, that includes companies that are manufacturing companies, transportation companies, energy production companies, that sort of thing. So very industrial sort of stuff. And they're given what are called allowances, and these allowances say you're allowed to emit this many. Let's say you're an energy production company, and you're allowed to emit 100 tons of greenhouse gas per year. If you only emit 80, then that difference of 20 allowances, you're now allowed to go sell in their cap and trade marketplace. Now, if you are a purchaser of those allowances, because say you emitted 120 tons of greenhouse gas in the year, now that brings you back down to your mandated ceiling, and you've purchased those allowances from someone who didn't emit those. Now, the state would calculate both of those, both the 20 allowances sold and the 20 allowances purchased, as avoided emissions. That means that they're double counted. The participants in these marketplaces know that this is the case, and they're smart business people. They know what these credits are actually worth, not what they purport to be worth. And so they discount them when they purchase them. So we see transaction prices happening anywhere from $10 to $15. But in reality, the buyers of these and the suppliers of these know that it's really not happening at that much. And then the other thing is that there are lots and lots of middlemen interacting between these sellers of these offsets or allowances and the buyers of these.
Would you be considered a middleman? Would Nori be considered a middleman, or are you just the platform?
We're sort of a middleman to end all middlemen. We're a platform that people can come and transact on, and we will have our own measurement and verification processes, and we'll be working with independent third-party verifiers to do that verification. But that's it. That's all you have to do. Right now, in the other markets, if you wanted to run a big carbon offset project, you would have to work with one of the number of different carbon registries that do the same work of setting up those rules and protocols around how the carbon dioxide is measured. And in order to work with them, you end up having to consult with them and pay them listing fees and consulting fees to come up with a custom bespoke measurement protocol. And these costs can range anywhere from $30,000 up to $250,000 per project. So there's an enormous amount of capital that's required to do it currently. And NORI is doing away with virtually all of that. We want to reduce that barrier to entry as much as possible. And the other thing with that is that the suppliers and the buyers, they have to meet and do their own business development with each other. So there's usually a broker interacting between them, but it's a very bespoke sort of interaction between them. And we want to make this a much smoother and more transparent process. So when you talk about 18.5 million tons of carbon offset credits being sold in 2016, we believe that that's because it's just far too difficult for anyone to actually do this. We want to make this as simple as possible. We're taking this web application that's a very easy. We want this to feel like a simple e-commerce kind of business flow.
And take out the relationship that needs to be built over time to do this. It should just be a simple a marketplace like eBay or a transactional thing where there's a little bit of verification that this person or this company is reputable and vice versa, right?
That's exactly right. I often say that we want to be the eBay of carbon. So that's a really good analogy you just made.
Well, everybody wants to be the eBay of something. So eBay is a multi-billion dollar company. You are not a nonprofit. How does NORI make money in this scenario? Why don't you explain your business model?
Mm-hmm. When the buyers purchase these carbon removal certificates, these CRCs, they're buying one-to-one. So if they're buying 10 CRCs, they're paying 10 NORI tokens for that. But they're also going to pay a small transaction fee on top of that. And that transaction fee goes to a couple things. One is it goes to us. That's our revenue that we make. And then another portion of the transaction fee goes to paying the verifier who verified those specific CRCs.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Paul Gamble. He's the co-founder and CEO of NORI. So, Paul, you and your colleagues are holding something called Reversapalooza, which is a summit to kind of jumpstart your marketplace this week, Thursday, the 26th in Seattle. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about this event and how people could get involved and what you're hoping will be some of the takeaways from it.
Sure. I'm really, really excited for this. We've been working on this for months. So it's the fact that we're here and all these people are coming in this week is kind of shocking and exciting for us. The point of Reversapalooza is it was a relatively small invite only. Well, it'll be about 100 people or so. A group of potential participants in our marketplace once we're up and running. So these are potential suppliers, verifiers, buyers, researchers, some of the absolute leading experts in the field of soil carbon removal and other methodologies, direct air capture and mine tailings and other things like that are going to be there. And The idea was to get all these people who would be interacting with our marketplace in the future to come together and learn about not only what Nori is doing and how our platform is going to work, but to meet each other and interact with each other and see what the other side is like and how what their role is and how that affects others in the system. So we're going to be doing kind of a broad discussion around many different topics, whether that's discussing how soil carbon removal actually works, how these other methodologies might work. We'll be doing a demo of our prototype, the actual software itself. We'll be talking about blockchains and how those work and how that fits into what it is that we're doing. For us, for Nori, a big part of this is getting feedback from all these potential participants so that we are actually building the system that these people need and will use, as opposed to just us kind of dictating what should happen. One of the other exciting things is that we're going to be recording every single talk and discussion at the conference, and we'll make those available on our website shortly afterwards, which is nori.com, and we'll host it on our YouTube channel. So you can find it on the website, nori.com.
Well, it's very exciting. I think one of the challenges will be getting through to that next tier of people, whether they be a chief sustainability officer or just somebody who's environmentally conscious, but may not have put in the legwork to really understand these pretty complex concepts. So let's go to the next Reversapalooza in a couple years, hypothetically. And how does Nori engage the chief sustainability officers from some of these other companies enough for them to get it, and then for them to tell their CEOs that, hey, this is something we need to get involved in?
I think that our biggest challenge, especially in these early days, is going to be establishing credibility. So that's in showing to people not only that our methods for measuring and verifying the CO2, but also this new financial model that we're creating, the idea of having a single universal price on carbon, and that there will be enough transaction volume happening in the market that if you're a supplier, it's worth your time to sell your carbon removal certificates through us. And if you're a buyer, we're providing the easiest way for you to offset or negate your carbon emissions. So for us, it's a matter of just executing on our plan and being able to show that what we are doing is working and will work for a number of different possible applications for how you want to offset these things. So for us, the business development strategy is just get this right. Just do what we're planning to do and the work will speak for itself. And in the future, we will be looking beyond just the corporations and thinking about how do we get this integrated into all sorts of different applications, whether it's the buying the CRCs at the gas pump or when you make a purchase online from some e-commerce store, having the shipping of your package negated, or when you're riding around in a taxi or an Uber or something, having the ride negated and having all that automated in the background. That's the real like interesting future for us. And so that's where we'll be trying to focus our business development as we go forward in the next few years. So having it's this really interesting combination of software approach and this more traditional carbon markets approach. And we're blending these together. So a couple of years from now, I think Reversapalooza is going to be even more interesting because there will be an even wider variety of types of people in attendance and sharing ideas and interacting with our platform.
He's the CEO of Nori. It's the world's only carbon dioxide removal marketplace, Paul Gamble. Paul, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Thanks a lot, Alex. That was fun.
Sway the future to the past and find what will
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Garage Artois, Beck, and the Steve Miller Band.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.